They took the woman into the highlands, but they went to the Cacao Brothers' village instead of Shisho's. A number of men here were carrying rifles from the Japanese cache, but no one was engaging in mass bayonet drills or trying to piece together World War II pack howitzers. Shisho and the Cacao Brothers rifled through the contents of her rucksack with more vigor than necessary. A laptop fell to the grass, followed by a tape recorder, batteries, a compact video camera, and tapes. Shisho sifted through the pile.
She got no guns.
The woman stared at Bolin. He was looking at her Reuters News Service ID, her passport, and her California driver's license. They seemed to be in order, and the passport was well weathered and stamped with seals of nations throughout the Pacific Rim.
Your beat is the South Pacific?
It used to be Europe. But I married a French guy and we moved to Tahiti. It didn't work out. He left. I liked the islands. My daughter liked them. I stayed.
Bolin examined a picture of a grinning, unshaved man and Thomas on the beach. They held a red-headed girl of no more than 2 or 3 in their arms.
She's 4 now. She's with my mother in Hawaii. Single woman's gotta work. Can I have my underwear back?
Bolin waved away the Highlanders. Thomas began angrily shoving her things back into her pack.
You're here to cover the revolution?
I was here to cover the situation. Everyone outside thinks there's a communist insurgency here. Then the Russians started raping and killing everything that moved. A villager down in the valley told me there was a price on my head with the caveat they could do anything they wanted to me as long as they brought me in alive. At that point, I decided to get some altitude.
I like her.
Thomas ran her eye in appreciation over the ex-Navy SEAL's scarred and chiseled torso.
I like you.
James waggled his eyebrows at the executioner.
What can you tell me about the opposition?
The Russians? They're acting like they're on a busman's holiday in Bosnia. I don't know who those other yahoos chasing me were, but...
I mean, Stephen Craig.
That is one serious son of a bitch you're messing with. He made his first billion in the United States and then found U.S. business law too confining. He went international, looking for opportunities that other businessmen would shudder to contemplate. He's a second-world economy unto himself. His bank account is bigger than the gross national product of a lot of the countries he messes with. And he makes people disappear. And just who are you with, if you don't mind my asking? CIA? Naval Intelligence?
I'm with the Black Panthers, Oceania chapter.
Shisho and the Cacao Brothers held up their fists solemnly.
And you?
Bolin gave the power salute.
This just keeps getting better and better.
Bolin glanced at the battered notebook computer as she shoved it back in with her belongings.
You got a wireless connection with that?
Oh, yeah.
She reached into a side pocket and pulled out a wireless base connection. The plastic box had a neat .22-caliber bullet hole punched through it.
Cell phone?
Battery's dead.
What do you know about the Russians?
They're being led by a man named Gaz. Ilya Gaz. Former Russian airborne, now he's a merc.
I've heard of him.
Ilya Gaz was on file at the farm. Stony Man kept tabs on all active mercenary outfits. The Russian wasn't on the front burner of any farm operations, but his activities qualified him for Bolin's attention. His presence explained a lot about how things had gone down on the island.
Calvin, find Miss Thomas a hut, let her freshen up, and get her something to eat and drink. Sho, you're with me.
Bolin turned and walked across the village with the Highlander in tow. Bolin moved toward a hut on the opposite side of the village. Bolin pushed through the hanging fabric of the door.
One minute!
Bolin stepped out of the hut.
Now tell me what I need to know.
Hiti Hiti came out a few minutes later.
Well, they got about 100 men, automatic rifles. Didn't show up with much in the way of light support. They're pirates, being led by Edgar Gabriello. Some woman came and hired them, flashing big money to help out dealing with the insurrection here on the island. I know Gabriello. Did some business with him once. Bad business. He's a real bad man.
It was bad enough. But pirates were used to raiding coastal villages and taking vessels unaware late in the night. Their discipline as soldiers, fighting a jungle warfare campaign of any duration, was highly suspect. A bloody nose could send them packing. James came running through the village. He did not look happy.
What's up, Cal?
We got a runner from the coast watching team up on the bluff. They said a boat arrived. Small one, yacht size. Some white men got off.
How many?
7 or 8.
Bolin glanced back at the hut.
Truman, did your friend say anything about expecting anybody?
Yeah. He said Gabriella and the Russians, they were holding up in town, waiting for some white man. Strange name. Rutabaga something.
Rutger Rutgers?
Yeah, the pirate kept saying that name twice.
And about 7 or 8 white men got off the boat with him?
Yeah.
This is bad, isn't it?
Yeah, this is bad.
Rutgers stepped off the gangplank, surrounded by his team. Each man carried a locked and loaded Beretta BM-59 assault rifle slung over his shoulder. Rutgers immediately took in the field fortifications around the town with approval. He had been assured the place would be cleaned up by the time he arrived. Someone had stepped in and done some ass-kicking. 2 men stood on the wharf to meet him. One was a short, heavily muscled Filipino he did not recognize. The other man was of the same stature, but with the wiry physique of a hardened veteran. The Russian offered him a sloppy salute that Rutgers did not return. Rutgers knew Ilya Gaz by reputation. His atrocities in Chechnya were well documented, as were his activities working with the Serbs in Bosnia and an equally brutal stint in the Congo. His specialties were kidnapping, torture, mayhem, and the ruthless suppression of the opponent's civilian population. However, there were numerous regions in the world where a ruthless outsider with Gaza's proclivities was needed. Mercenary work was at best a moral gray area. Rutger Eugenius Rutgers represented the professional mercenary business in its best light. Ilya Gaz represented the absolute cancer-blackened ass end of it. Gaz exposed his gums in an ugly smile. Rutgers smiled back thinly. He was not here to put up with any bullshit. He had come to win. His future was at stake.
You are Captain Gabriello, then?
Yes, I am Captain.
Good. Tell me, where are you holding the reporter?
Gabriello looked away uncomfortably.
Captain Gabriello let her get away. Lost 12 of his men in the attempt. The Highlanders are probably barbecuing them as we speak.
Gabriello's hand was on his knife.
How many men do they have in total?
About 88 of Edgar's crew, about 120 or so of mine, if none of the pricks have gotten themselves killed today. Maybe 20 Menzies men, that's
230 men, approximately. I want all the men not on the perimeter assembled for inspection in 45 minutes.
Listen here, Rutgers.
Commander Rutgers, Senior Lieutenant Gaz.
Commander.
45 minutes. I want all forces ready to assault in 48 hours.
Bolin considered his battle plan. A single coconut oil lamp lit his hut. He lay in a low hammock and scanned Burdick's inventory list for the 100th time. There were far too many question marks scratched next to the list of Japanese antiquities they had dug from the bunker. Red had been cannibalizing parts and hoped to have at least 1, possibly 2, functioning pack howitzers by dawn. Those could turn the tide of battle. They had 1 heavy and 1 light machine gun. Those weapons would be their only answer to the enemy's helicopter. They would have to suck the chopper in close with something irresistible, probably himself, and Bolin's barely trained machine gun crews would have only 1 chance to knock the chopper out of the sky before they got ripped to pieces by the answering fire. In the end, the whole thing was going to hinge on surprise and 1 suicidal bayonet charge. Bolin's hand closed around the grips of a Spanish Astra Falcon pistol. They'd netted 12 Chinese automatic rifles and an assortment of handguns from the battle with the pirates on the mountain trail. They needed more, but the enemy was holing up tight in town. In the morning, he and James would see about coaxing a few of them out from their entrenchments. The veranda outside the hut creaked with human weight. Bolin pushed off the Astra's thumb safety. The Highlanders didn't have doors or window panes. They just hung fabric to keep out mosquitoes. Bolin flicked the safety back on and tucked the pistol away.
Come on in, Juliet.
Juliet Thomas pushed aside the fabric. The tropical rain fell heavily and took only a few seconds to soak a person. The reporter's white t-shirt clung to her curves like a translucent second skin.
How did you know it was me?
You're the only person who would knock. Calvin, Red, and Truman would have called out so I wouldn't shoot them. And the Highlanders don't give a damn. They just walk right in and expect something to eat.
Do you really think you stand a chance?
Maybe.
She looked at the pistol resting on his lap, and then at the antique sniper rifle in the corner and the sword sheathed next to it.
I took a walk around the village today.
Oh?
I counted about 75 grown men.
And?
And less than half had a rifle. Less than half of them had anything more modern than that museum piece over there. I've been through the coastal areas and one of the river valleys. The people are angry and ready to fight. But you better have something up your sleeve.
Guts? Determination?
You think that's enough? Against Gaz? Against Gabriello?
Gabriello's men are pirates, and Gaz's men are mercs of the lowest kind. You give them stiff resistance. You let them know that 10 of you are willing to die just to scratch one of them, and they'll go into, "We didn't sign up for this shit" mode. The wild card is Rutgers. With him on the island, these guys will develop backbone, whether they want to or not. Then again, Rutgers is a professional. He'll see a no-win situation quicker than the pirates and thugs. It all comes down to Craig. He's a businessman. I don't think we have to win, we just have to turn the situation unprofitable. Craig sees that, and he'll cut his losses and go find himself a new situation.
Craig's the kind of asshole who doesn't take no for an answer.
Then he's a dead man.
You think so?
I've seen firsthand what he's unleashed on this island.
Thomas shivered.
Sorry. Didn't mean to scare you.
You didn't scare me. Actually, that tough guy stuff turns me on.
She sat beside him in the hammock. Boland took in Juliet's body. A blue-eyed redhead with a deep tan was a rarity. Her long hair spilled across his arm, her skin pressed against his bare shoulder and side. Her perfectly turned calf rubbed against his. The wet t-shirt clung to her curves. He was tempted, but he didn't respond.
Oh my God, a genuine gentleman. You're thinking it'd be wrong to take advantage of me.
A little. You've been through a lot lately. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking I'm a single mom who's never made love in a hammock.
Boland blew out the lamp, and coconut-scented smoke drifted in the darkness. A sodden t-shirt hit the floor. Flesh filled both of Boland's hands as the knot of his sarong was unraveled. The hammock swung like a pendulum, and she seized his shoulders so she wouldn't topple out.
Damn it! How do we do this?
You know, the natives don't do it in hammocks. They just sleep in them. If they want good lovin', they go off in the bushes like decent people.
I'm perverted.
Her hands moved across his body.
And I'm on a mission.
Okay, but this is gonna get complicated, possibly dangerous.
I can take direction.
Boland rose before dawn. The reporter had crept from the hammock late in the night after the rain had stopped. She had said nothing, so Boland had feigned sleep and let her go. The hammock had been quite an experience. Juliet Thomas had done much more than take direction. She had proved downright resourceful. Boland stepped out onto the veranda. Calvin James sat on a log watching the volcano turn black as the orange light of the rising sun came up from behind. He glanced up at Boland from a cup of the steaming weeds the natives passed for tea. He pointed an accusing finger.
Man, she was mine.
She came to my hut, gal.
It's on the agenda for the day.
We need more guns, and I want to probe the enemy defenses. Piss them off, give them an opportunity to make some mistakes. Maybe draw out their helicopter and shoot the shit out of it.
James eyed the rifle Boland held in his hand.
Sniper mission?
You down with that?
I'll go get the binoculars.
I'll wake Red and let him in on the plan.
Except for a few guards with rifles, the village still slept. Boland stopped by the reporter's hut. His hand went to the fabric hanging over the door and found it had been tied down. Boland's bayonet came out of his sarong. The razor-sharp steel parted the cord holding one side of the fabric. Boland stepped inside the hut. Thomas sat cross-legged in front of her laptop. Bolin noted that the wireless connection with the bullet hole in it was plugged in, and a component he did not recognize was attached to it. The component had a short antenna. At the top of it was a miniature folding parabolic dish, like an aluminum sunflower. Bolin doubted the rig had the power to reach Reuters in London. For that matter, it would not be able to reach the Solomon Islands or Port Moresby in Papua. A transmitter that small would need a local base station with an internet connection to relay off a satellite. The only possible local base station on Pa'anui would be in the Church of England, and it would be in Russian hands. The video camera lay in two halves. The body of the camera had been an empty shell and had been used to smuggle in the transmitter and God only knew what else. But Bolin suspected that his hut and probably half the village were wired for sound by now. The woman's head flew up. Her eyes flicked to the transmitter unit and then to Bolin and the blade he held. She made no attempt at pretense or denial. Her blue eyes simply glared at Bolin with startlingly glacial, insane hatred.
I want you to recline backward very slowly until you're lying on your back. Then roll onto your stomach and keep your hands at your sides.
Her hand flicked to her components and closed around a metal case shaped like an oversized video cassette. Bolin reversed the knife in his hand as she grabbed the metal cassette in both hands and yanked it apart. One half clicked back to form a rudimentary buttstock. From beneath the other half, the pistol grip and loaded magazine dropped down into position. Bolin flung the bayonet. The bayonet sank into the woman's shoulder. The miniature submachine gun emptied itself through the roof of the hut. She dropped the submachine gun and pulled the blade free. Bolin ignored his fallen pistol and lunged. She had already rolled backward and popped to her feet, and she ripped the transmitter component out of the laptop as she went. She scooped something off the floor and flung herself through the window. Bolin dived after her. Juliet was on her feet and running. Burdick came around the corner, his eyes wide at the scene.
Red, stop her!
Burdick threw a massive left-handed haymaker at her jaw. Red's fist smashed through the wall of the hut. Her own ridge hand blow swung between Red's legs. She was still on the move. Bolin vaulted Burdick's agonized form as the woman accelerated away down a lane between a pair of fences. Truman Hiti Hiti suddenly filled the lane to block her path. His ham-like hands shot out to grab her. She jumped, legs scissoring. The Tongan had just enough time to blink as her first and second kick literally walked up his chest. He staggered as her body torqued around and her heel hit his face. Juliet landed running. The woman's head turned once to check Bolin's progress, and she accelerated even more. Bolin grimly gave chase. The wound in his leg was already burning with each step. The wound in her shoulder did not seem to be affecting her stride in the slightest. They passed out of the village and ran through the trees.
Striker!
Bolin lengthened his stride and sprinted all out. The woman's head turned. Bolin was gaining. The trail through the forest plateau suddenly plunged downward into a mountain path. Juliet Thomas raced down it like a gazelle. Suddenly, the gray metal cylinder of a white phosphorus grenade rolled into Bolin's line of sight.
Shit!
Bolin threw himself off the path and crashed through the wall of solid jungle. The white-hot streamers of smoke and burning phosphorus reached out at Bolin as he rolled down the mountainside. He continued to roll, putting distance between himself and the burning death raining down. Bolin came to a jarring stop against a tree trunk. Choking white smoke bloomed and mated with the mist on the mountain above. The black smoke of burning jungle undergrowth was swiftly mixing with it. He had managed to fall down the mountain out of the lethal range of the falling phosphorus.
Striker!
Bolin rose to a crouch and scanned his surroundings. Juliet Thomas, or whoever she was wounded and most likely doing distance. But Bolin had seen the woman in action, and he did not put it past her to double back and try to finish him off.
Striker!
Boland picked up a fist-sized rock and made his way back to the trail. Smoke and fire blocked the mountain path. Boland peered down the misty slopes. He caught movement through a break in the morning fog. His first assessment had been correct. Thomas showed no sign of slowing.
Stryker!
Yeah! I'm all right.
Juliet?
Gone.
Can you make your way back up?
No. Meet me in the East River Valley. Bring your medical kit. Bring my rifle and the equipment we'll need, and come quick.
The morning mission goes on as planned?
If Red can still walk, tell him to get his team ready and in position. We counterattack immediately.
Church of England. Lizabeth Smokovny walked up to the Russian pickets before they knew she was there.
I'm unarmed. I'm...
The reporter!
The woman's thumb shot to the guard's throat.
You! Tell me, has the Rutgers arrived?
The second man clutched his rifle uncertainly.
You don't remember me?
The Russian blinked as he saw past the blue contact lenses and the long red hair extensions.
Oh, da! You were spying!
That's right. Now why don't you escort me into town so I don't have to hurt anyone else?
The guard fell into step, and they marched from the jungle picket toward the cleared no-man's land surrounding the town.
Fetch a medic.
Lizabeth broke off from the guard. She walked into the Menzies mining office. The guards inside had seen her walk up from the window, but were not sure what to do. They stared at her bloody shoulder as she walked up the stairs. Rutgers stood behind a desk. Edgar Gabriello and two white men she did not recognize were with him.
Our Trojan horse.
When did you figure it out?
We detected you when you went active on the wireless link this morning. Of course, the information you sent was encrypted and not intended for me, but what was happening was easy enough to deduce.
You got my men killed? On purpose?
Attempts to kill or capture me were necessary for my cover.
But what if Gaz or Gabriella's men had shot or killed you?
I considered that a distant possibility at best.
Please, sit down. You're bleeding. May I get you something to drink?
Rutgers reached into a small refrigerator and brought out a bottle of South African Sauvignon Blanc and uncorked it. He poured a glass as the medic arrived.
Proceed with your report.
The woman didn't flinch as the Russian medic cleaned and probed the wound. She sipped her wine as he began stitching.
I saw only one village before I was compromised. I believe there are four or five up there, though much smaller than the valley and the coastal settlements.
What did you see there?
Three special force operators are in command. The same three as you mentioned in your situation report. I have confirmed they are all Americans. But what branch of service or the U.S. government they represent, if any, is unclear. My first impression is they are acting independently. Truman Hitihiti, the smuggler, is with them and cooperating. So I'm assuming he has actively joined the revolutionary forces.
What kind of armament did you observe?
On first contact, the commandos had some malfunctioning submachine guns and some equally unreliable hand grenades. They look like antiques. I noticed a number of very old bolt-action rifles among the natives as well. They must be World War II surplus. Everything else they have is captured from us, and that is limited to a few dozen automatic rifles and handguns. The rest are armed with spears.
I assume you can find the village again.
Yes. The paths up the mountain are fairly clear if you know where to find them. The paths between the Highland villages should be equally obvious.
I am considering launching an assault within the hour.
Really?
Yes.
Rutgers poured himself a glass of wine and took a seat on the couch. He gazed out the window toward the cloud-shrouded volcano that loomed over everything.
I wish to have at least one of the Highland villages pacified and a mountain base camp established before nightfall. The reduction of the rest of the Highlands should proceed rapidly after that.
Very aggressive.
I wish to end the guerrilla warfare phase of this campaign. It should never have been allowed to begin.
I concur.
Lizabeth, your report confirms that the revolutionary forces in the Highlands cannot stand up to the concentrated attack. I want the Russians broken into squads, each led by one of my men. I wish to finish this war now, with one massive blow from which they cannot recover.
The paths are steep and treacherous. They will attempt ambushes.
We will dismount the automatic grenade launchers from the vehicles and bring them with us. The helicopter will direct fire.
Do it.
You think Greg will authorize it?
I am authorizing it. Your appraisal is correct. The time for tit-for-tat raids is over. It is time for open warfare. We take the Highlands, we take the initiative, we strike the first blow, and we strike the last one. Get down! Sniper!
Gabriello's right-hand man, Flores, watched in frozen horror as the headshot South African oozed blood and bodily fluids across the desk. Flores was next.
It's the commando. He had a sniper rifle in his hut.
Rice, take Voldemort and Jensen. You're on the ground. Put Piet and Keynes in the helicopter. I want this sniper before sundown.
I'll bring you his head.
Bolan belly crawled to his next firing position. Calvin James crawled alongside him. Tracers streaked through the trees, and grenades were raining down blindly through the jungle canopy. The enemy had not detected exactly where he had fired from, but they sure as hell would have their eyes wide open now. The two sprawled in their next arranged position behind a clump of rocks that offered cover and a perfect firing lane through the trees to the enemy watchtower. Bolan arranged himself around the rifle. The soldier craned his neck and sighted on the church steeple. He examined the man behind the sandbagged machine gun emplacement and then put his crosshairs on the man with the Dragunov semi-automatic sniper rifle scanning the tree line.
Range me.
Calvin James scanned the target with the ancient Japanese Royal Navy artillery binoculars.
Range 620 meters. Wind from the right, 10 miles per hour.
Bolan altered his aim just slightly and squeezed the trigger.
Hit!
Bolan and James were already up and sprinting through the trees. James flipped the selector lever on his commandeered assault rifle to full auto.
Chopper!
The executioner kept his eyes on the single road leading out of the fortified town.
They're deploying a team. Counter sniper.
Someone judged the angle of that last shot of yours pretty damn precisely.
We're up against executive options men now. The screwing around is over.
James cocked his head as he gauged the rotor noise.
He's flying on one engine. Looks like you and Red did him some damage they haven't been able to repair.
Olin noted the loaded rocket boxes beneath the lateral armament pylons. The damage hadn't been enough. Executive Options was sending out a full platoon in the anti-sniper role, and they had air support. Bolan and James had one very dodgy surprise up their sleeves, and if it failed, they would be dead meat under the onslaught of the South African mercenaries.
Move it!
Red, Truman, Shisho, and the Cacao brothers jogged down the jungle path. A half dozen Highlanders carrying rifles and lattices woven with brush and vines followed. Truman and the Highlanders carried the Type 92 heavy machine gun between them. Red ran point, cradling his Type 96 light machine gun. All of them were festooned with spare magazines and clips of ammo. Red checked his watch and picked up the pace.
Move! Move!
They came to the little wooded promontory on top of a hill that formed a natural overlook above the valley.
Here!
The plan was to be there and be ready to go helicopter hunting by noon. They had 20 minutes until showtime. The Highlanders with the screens began binding them into the trees to form a hide for their gun position. The gun crew began setting up the weapon. One nice thing Red had discovered, the Japanese Imperial forces had put anti-aircraft sights on everything, including their infantry rifles. But the majority of Japanese World War II machine guns required lubricated ammunition. The gun grease in storage had gone bad decades ago, and the gun oil had similarly congealed into black paste. Burdick didn't care to contemplate how long automatic fire could be sustained on coconut oil.
Jesus. These machine guns smell like goddamn piña coladas.
Piet, how close?
Piet Duncan examined a shrub. There was a smear of blood on the leaf tips. He rubbed the blood between his fingers. It smeared across his fingertips easily. It had barely started to coagulate. He grinned as he attached a fresh rifle grenade to the muzzle of his BM-59 rifle.
Close, man. Real close.
Bryce Delvoye scanned the trees over the sights of his own rifle.
Bryce, movement. 200 meters from your position. Due west.
Affirmative.
He flipped the grenade sight a notch. The door guns of the Dauphin were already weaving threads of tracers down into the jungle.
Keynes, they're heading for the foothills.
Duncan began moving forward. Delvois and his squad of Russians followed.
From there, they can make their way up into the mountains. Get ahead of them. Drop a sniper team, we'll sweep them toward you.
Affirmative, Frank.
Jinsey, take your team, sweep hard north. Flank them.
Duncan held up his fist and dropped into a crouch. There were more blood traces, and he was staring intently out into the brush. Delvois and his team halted. Delvois crept up beside his scout.
Well, there.
There was a tiny movement in the underbrush. Delvois saw a flash of dark skin. He raised his rifle to his shoulder and sighted. Delvois blinked as blood sprayed into his eyes and his rifle was ripped from his hands. Duncan whirled, leveling his weapon. Duncan was dead. The Russians opened up with their rifles in a hailstorm of automatic fire in all directions. Delvois drew his .40 caliber Vector pistol and began squeezing off rounds through the trees for his first target, but the Black Commando was already gone. Delvois lowered his pistol. The enemy had already moved on. Valdemar Solomon and his team came up on the run.
Jesus, Delvois, your arm!
Delvois looked down. His rifle lay in the leaf mulch covered in blood. His hand still grasped the forestock. Delvois checked his left arm and discovered there was little left but ragged flesh and shards of bone below the elbow joint. Bolin and James ran for their lives. The executive options men were good, too good. The enemy was on their trail, and above the jungle canopy, the helicopter hovered like an angel of death. The canopy was thick, but the door gunners fired through it for effect. The helicopter had zoomed off. Bolin and James took the opportunity to sprint in an effort to put a cushion between themselves and their pursuers.
Down!
They're hurting us, you know, and we're being flanked.
They're leapfrogging guys ahead of us with the helicopter. Just run!
The two men continued their headlong run through the jungle. The land was rising toward the hills. It was going to be very close. The helicopter knifed across the jungle. David Keynes pointed at a slight break in the canopy. A small pond and some rock formations made a dent in the jungle carpet. It was a perfect insertion point.
Paul, put your team there! Bryce is driving them toward the spot!
Keynes looked over his shoulder. Just above the clearing were the foothills, and above them the path ran nearly straight up the mountain into the mist. The enemy barely needed herding.
Ready ropes!
The Russians slung fast rappel ropes out the cabin doors. Thomas slung his bags and grabbed his rifle. He attached a grenade and then leaned out over the jungle and prepared to kick away.
Tell Bryce that the backup will be in position in 2 minutes.
Affirmative! Go! Go! Go!
The four Russians deployed out the cabin doors. Thomas clung to his rope with one hand as he aimed his heavy battle rifle.
There! There! Fire!
Inside the copter, Keane swung his gaze toward the hilltop and spotted the target. There was motion in the trees covering the hilltop. Strange motion. Portions of the jungle seemed to be falling away. Thomas tossed in his empty rifle and swung back into the helicopter. He threw himself into the co-pilot seat with a smile. The helicopter filled the ring sight of the ancient machine gun. Red's fists clenched the twin pistol grips and his thumbs shoved down on the paddle trigger.
Fire!
Tracers drew smoking lines straight into the hovering aircraft. Off to one side, Heaty Heaty cut loose with the light machine gun. The Cacao brothers knelt to either side, gritting their teeth and steadying the vibrating tripod of spears cradling the weapon. The remaining half dozen Highlanders fired their rifles as fast as they could work the bolts. Some were shooting at the helicopter. Others were taking shots at the armed men descending out of it like spiders on the fast ropes. Tracers screamed as the door gunner began returning fire. Red held down his trigger. Shishou knelt beside him in the loader's position, assisting the heavy brass strips of vintage ammunition into the feed ramp. Cacao flew backward as tracers stitched him from crotch to collar. Heaty Heaty held his position and streamed fire back into the aircraft.
Reload!
The helicopter jerked, and the men on the ropes plummeted to the rocks below. Heat shimmered and rose from the cooling fins of Red's weapon, and the stench of burning oil overpowered the smell of burned gunpowder. Red kept his sights dead on. Black holes appeared in the fuselage, and the windows cracked and spider-webbed into opaqueness with bullet strikes. Red grinned savagely as he walked a burst across the open cabin door. Shisho snatched his singed hands away from the feed ramp and dropped his stripper clip.
Get on it!
Smoke was pouring out of the action. Shisho scooped up the clip and shoved it into the smoldering red-hot feed ramp. Red continued firing into the Dauphin. The helicopter dipped and skewed crazily over the clearing as the black smoke of burning oil belched from its exhaust.
Cut, you son of a bitch!
Shisho snatched his hands away as a flame burst out of the feed ramp. The coconut oil had ignited. Berta kept firing. The burning weapon continued to suck in the brass strips and spew rounds from the muzzle. The oiler cap blew off, and the geyser of fire shot straight up out of the weapon.
Ah, goddammit!
Red doggedly held on as burning oil spattered his forearms and face.
Fuck!
Swinging around, the nose of the smoking helicopter pointed straight at Red. The pilot squeezed his trigger. The target below seemed to already be on fire. The rocket spewed flame under the weapon's pylons as the electric igniters fired.
Ah!
The helicopter lurched as bullets ripped into the cockpit. Keynes' finger unconsciously clamped on his trigger, and his rocket salvoed off target in smoking ripples across the jungle. Thomas jerked and shuddered in the co-pilot seat as round after round hammered him into bloody oblivion. Keynes rammed his throttles forward again, but he was already losing power. Bullets continued to hammer the airframe as the helicopter spun out of control. The jungle loomed in a sickening green spin as the helicopter plummeted. The executioner ran full tilt toward the smoke and fire ahead. James was right behind him. They hadn't been able to see it, but the entire western side of the island had to have heard the helicopter go down and the firecracker detonations of the rocket pods. They came to a clearing and found the remains of the Dauphin. A dead man lay charred in the co-pilot's seat. One door gunner hung shot to pieces in his chicken straps. The other's hips and lower torso were still attached to his harness. His upper half had been scraped off on the rocks. The pilot was gone. James knelt beside the smoldering wreck.
Tracks and blood. The pilot walked out.
Bolin walked over to a heavy canvas bag that had been thrown clear and checked the contents.
Cal, check this.
James ambled over and peered inside.
Oh, yes.
The bag was a virtual candy store of anti-personnel unpleasantness. Bolin slung the bag and they headed out for the foothills. They'd done their damage for the day. Church of England. David Keynes staggered into the command center. The right side of his face was a slag of blistered and burned flesh. Rutgers shot up in his seat.
Jesus Christ, man!
Keynes grabbed a beer from the bucket of ice in the corner. He pressed the sweating bottle against the ruins of his face. He flopped on the couch and looked at Rutgers accusingly.
Heavy machine guns. And just where the bloody hell did they get heavy machine guns, Gaz?
Rutgers raised an eyebrow at Gaz.
All heavy weapons are accounted for.
Keynes looked around blearily. The Menzies mining office had been sandbagged and reveted with rammed earth and palm trunks inside and out.
I see you've redecorated.
Rutgers turned to the woman.
You sank Heaty Heaty's boat. They floated to shore unarmed, did they not?
According to Gaz's report, they made their first attack against his men with rocks.
Rutgers looked over to one of his soldiers.
Get this man a medic.
Yes, sir.
And shut that door. Keynes, what can you report?
It was an ambush. Two support weapons that I could see. One light, one heavy. It happened very fast. But I could swear one of the weapons was already smoking, even burning before I could fire back with rockets. There were numerous riflemen all around in the trees. The rate of fire was not high. I think bolt action weapons, as the woman reported.
Rutger shoved his laptop over to Gottwald.
Stepan, I want a list of all Japanese World War II small arms, up to light support and crew-served weapons issued in the Pacific Islands Theater. Find a history of Japanese troop deployment on Pa'anui. Anything regarding the conflict you can find.
Right.
Valdemar, find an interpreter. And then find me any islanders old enough to remember the fighting. I want accounts of who, what, where, and when.
Yes, sir.
Rutgers turned to the woman.
I need you to contact Craig. Tell him I need at least 2 helicopter gunships. 4 would be better.
Craig is on his way. In fact, he should be here within 24 hours. More helicopters will take time. We will either have to buy civilian helicopters in Australia and modify them, or somehow arrange to clandestinely get them on loan from Papuan government.
If the Papuans want their billions out of this island, you tell them to send us some damn helicopters.
I will contact Craig immediately.
Rutgers stared at the map of Pa'anui that dominated the wall in front of the desk. The woman pulled out her cell phone.
Never mind, that will still probably be too long.
What do you propose?
We stick to the plan.
Rutgers peered out the window. The panoramic view of the top office had been narrowed into a firing slit in the sandbags and heavy timber reinforcing the office.
We attack with everything. Full force. We attack tomorrow.
We attack tonight with everything we got.
You fucking nuts, bro. We shot down their helicopter. Stopped them cold. They're licking their wounds, man.
And we're licking ours. We lost good men today. Half of the dozen Highlanders I took down the mountain are wounded. 3 are dead.
We need time.
You're out of time. Rutgers is going to attack tomorrow. He's going to march right up this mountain at dawn, and Hellfire is coming with him. The paths up the mountain are narrow. If he's smart, and he is, he'll dismount his grenade launchers and blow the hell out of any resistance he finds on the way. We lost our heavy machine gun. The light is doubtful. So far, you've been able to wipe out small incursions and probes, but the Highlands aren't ready for a full-scale invasion. He'll take heavy casualties, but he won't care about expending pirates or Russian thugs. He wants to get this over with and go home. He's coming tomorrow, and he intends to win. Wiping out poorly armed rebel movements is what he does best.
So you want to take Sea of E tonight?
I want to take the entire island.
The men sitting in council sat straighter.
Tonight, Pa'anui is free.
The old men thumped their chests in agreement. They were sick of the interlopers on their island. This day they had scored a real victory. They were prepared to finish it.
Send out runners, through the highlands, through the valleys, along the coast. Send out the call for every man who can wield a spear.
Hey, I have an idea.
Within hours, Boland found himself gazing at a mechanical monstrosity sitting in the middle of the village. The entire war council was assembled before it.
It's gonna rip itself apart in 3 goes, bruh.
Hiti Hiti regarded the catapult with a mixture of awe and fear.
Probably gonna rip some arms off with it.
Theoretically, what kind of range are we talking about?
Inspector Fillmore chewed his stub of pencil. As the only artilleryman present, he had been elected siege engineer.
Well, I don't know, mate. The math is pretty simple, but it's the variables that get dodgy. We're talking homemade rope, fresh-cut trees, wet wood, no decent axle, hand release rather than trigger. You might get 200 yards maybe first go, then...
So, we're going to have some dispersion.
Dispersion? You'll have quite a bit of that, no worries. And Truman, he's spot on. This machine will rip itself apart right quick, and likely rip apart the lads working it when she goes.
Boland didn't doubt it, but the more immediate question was range. 200 yards meant they would have to set up and throw practically from the tree line to hit targets in C of E.
Disassemble it and haul it down the mountain. Truman, build me another.
Build you another?
You have 3 hours of light left. Make the best of them.
Boland turned to Shishou.
How many can we count on?
From the coast, from the valley, from the highlands, maybe 500. Almost none with guns. They're showing up with spears and machetes. They'll charge once. After that...
Boland knew all too well what would happen if the charge failed. He glanced at Red.
You refilled your ranks?
Yeah, I picked up a dozen new boys. Gave them rifles and an hour of shooting and bayonet drill. You'll have your 500 Spartans. Ready to charge the wire.
How are we doing on those cannons?
I don't trust them. I don't like the look of the breaches at all. I think they're gonna blow themselves up after 1 or 2 shots. We haven't tested them, and we don't have crews trained yet.
All right, forget them. Give me a case of their ammo. James, you still got that Jeep tucked away someplace?
Yeah, but it's unarmed.
A pair of Highlanders manhandled a crate of 50mm howitzer shells forward.
It's armed now.
What are we going to use for a fuse?
Bolin held up a pipe bomb.
So who's leading the charge of the Light Brigade?
I'll lead my men.
No, you're our machine gunner. You're hanging back and shooting. The charge will depend on it.
I trained them. I showed them which was the sharp end and told them what they were going to have to do. I'm not going to just pat them on the head and send them to their deaths.
I'll do it, bro.
The War Council turned to look at Truman Heaty Heaty.
You don't have to, Truman. You and I are square. You've already gone way beyond the call of our contract. You didn't sign up for this war.
Signing up now, bruh. The islands, and I mean all the islands, been shit on for a century. I say fuck Menzies, fuck Craig, and pardon me, white man, but fuck you. This is an island thing.
Bolin nodded. An ancient native approached Bolin and handed him an object. He held the spiral shell of a conch. Another was given to Shisho. The third was placed in Truman Heaty Heaty's hands. They held the war horns of the highlands. Pa'anui was going to war. Sisa and her sister brought Bolin another gift of battle. The guardian skeleton they had found in the bunker had carried the weapon of his forefathers. The handle had rotted in his skeletal hands and the guard reduced to a disc of rust, but the blade had been salvaged. The split wooden sheath had been mended with bands of fiber. Bolin drew the blade. Half a century of disuse had left it pitted and deeply discolored, but the steel had been scoured and oiled, and the thin, hard arc of the edge gleamed from fresh sharpening. Bolin examined the edge and saw the hammon, the temper line that ghosted along the edge like a cloud in the steel. This was a genuine sword of the samurai, made by traditional methods. The blade was undoubtedly centuries old. It had undergone modification. The rotted wood and raised skin hilt was gone. An intricately carved 14-inch tiki of the Pa'anui god of war had replaced it. The idol had been split in two and then pegged and bound around the tang of the blade to form a new hilt. The rusted guard was gone, and no effort had been made to replace it. The war god glared up at Bolin, eyes crossing at the blade protruding from his skull. The war council and the gathered Highlanders seemed to hold their breath while Bolin examined the weapon. The Highlanders watched the warrior dance steel through the air. The executioner rammed the blade straight up into the dying sunlight and held it high overhead. It gleamed in a hard orange line with the sun and the volcano behind it. Bolin's blue eyes blazed.
Pa'anui!